let me in. Shiba, shiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba, shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba, shiba. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. And there are so many things to be enjoyed in this city, whether it's a performance or a science thing, an event that's happening. It's all good. For those of you who enjoy the more scientific things, we've talked a lot about Wonderfest and we've talked with a lot of their science envoys, but we haven't actually talked about a lot of the events that they usually have going on throughout the year, and I want to correct that. So here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome the shapely and talented Tucker Hewitt. Welcome. Tucker, hi.
Thank you, Marilyn. I am shapely and somewhat talented. Thank you for inviting me on.
So before we get started, tell me a little bit about how Wonderfest came to be.
Wonderfest was born in 1997, a long time ago, inspired by a great book by an astronomer named Carl Sagan. Mm-hmm. Sagan was a great science popularizer, and he wrote a book entitled the subtitle is Science is a Candle in the Dark. The full title is The Demon-Haunted World. And in that book, Sagan uttered this line: I hold that the popularization of science is successful if, at first, it does no more than spark the sense of wonder.
Oh.
And Wonderfest was born back then in 1997.
And who, when was that, you or who was it?
It was me. I was a high school physics teacher at the time.
Ah.
And I persuaded my school to help fund a festival of science that was indeed in the Bay Area, so its full title was the Bay Area Festival of Science,
mm-hmm.
and it happened at three college campuses in the Bay Area, at UC Berkeley, your alma mater, mm-hmm. at Stanford, and at UCSF. Since then, Wonderfest has scaled back a bit. It's not at all at three campuses. In fact, it's not at campuses at all, and it's not exactly a festival. It's still festive, as mm-hmm. the name suggests, but instead, Wonderfest now puts on events around the year, throughout the Bay Area, but usually concentrated in San Francisco and in Marin. So I'll tell you about some upcoming events and describe what they're all about.
Okay.
Does that help you?
That would be lovely.
Okay. For instance, tomorrow, May 12th, here in San Francisco, at the San Francisco Public Library, Wonderfest is putting on an event called How a Shark Thinks.
Ooh.
And it's a talk by a great popularizer of marine science. He's professor of marine science, Stephen Palumbi,
mm-hmm.
From there at Stanford. And he'll be coming up. It starts at 6 o'clock tomorrow at the central branch of the San Francisco Public Library. And it'll be fun. If you've ever wondered how a shark thinks, what it's like to be a shark,
and
Steve Palumbi can help us understand.
And is that something that you could bring kids to? Because from what I hear from librarians, one of the most popular subjects for young children is sharks, tied with dinosaurs.
Yeah, I'm sure. The talk will be scientific, but Dr. Palumbi knows that the audience will be diverse in age,
mm-hmm.
so I imagine he'll make sure that the youngins in the crowd can understand most of what he's saying.
Excellent. And that's when again?
That's tomorrow, May 12th,
mm-hmm.
How a Shark Thinks. And to learn about the event, if you don't mind sending your listeners online, I advise you, please, to visit Wonderfest, all one word, mm-hmm. wonderfest.org, O-R-G, as in nonprofit corporation.
And I see that it's happening at 6 o'clock tomorrow at the San Francisco Public Library Steve Silver Music Center. So it's
yes,
at the main
indeed.
Library.
Now, that's not a huge room, but I have a feeling that if we'll bring in perhaps 50 people, and that's a nice intimate group where mm-hmm. you really can ask a question of the scientist.
Excellent. And I didn't mean to cut you off. So tell me more about the things that are happening at the library or that's happening with Wonderfest.
Well, this special event tomorrow is special because Wonderfest doesn't often get to partner with a library. But we are doing it tomorrow, and it's free, so I'm really excited about that. All Wonderfest events that are put on just by us mm-hmm. are indeed free. The drawback for the full Bay Area is often with in-person events is just getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderfest's favorite venue is a place called Hop Monk Tavern. That's in Marin County,
mm-hmm.
and typically our events happen there on Tuesday evenings,
okay.
and they are invariably free. For instance, the next Wonderfest event up there at Hop Monk in Marin
mm-hmm.
is called Rock Clocks and Supernovae. The full title is Ask a Science Envoy,
mm-hmm.
Rock Clocks and Supernovae. So maybe you'll allow me just to describe that event, because it's actually worth a drive north there on May 27th.
I'd love to hear about it.
All right. The full initial part of the title is Ask a Science Envoy, because
mm-hmm.
the two speakers at this event are each one is a science envoy from Wonderfest.
Mm-hmm.
That is, these are PhD students from, in this case, both from UC Berkeley, who want to become even more accomplished science communicators.
Mm.
So on that evening of May 27th, that would be at 7 p.m., Caroline Hassler, a geologist from UC Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
will be talking about measuring geologic time with rock clocks.
And she was just here.
Yes, and she gave a great interview with you. I loved her talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then that talk by Caroline will be followed by Eli Whiston, an astronomer from UC Berkeley, who will be talking about on seeing core collapse supernovae with radio telescopes. So we've got a good view of Earth through Caroline's talk about geochronology, how we know how old things are on the Earth, how the Earth itself evolved as a planet. And then we'll follow that up with a sky view from Eli Whiston, talking about supernovae, these fantastic explosions in space, and how we learn about them via radio waves.
And he's also been on the show. So for my listening audience who might want to get a feel for what they sound like and how they will be, you can listen to older recordings of that. I believe you've captured them on your website?
Well, thanks to you, yes. I've managed to upload the various episodes of your KPOO interviews to the Wonderfest website. So if people go to wonderfest.org, they'll see a menu that says Science Envoys. And if they click on that menu, they'll see a description of this Science Envoy program that helps these PhD students to become better science communicators. And there's a little button that says Envoy Interviews. And that provides access to all of your delightful interviews with the Science Envoys.
Why, thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. So you've talked about two events that are coming up, but I want to hear more.
Okay. Let me mention another one. This
okay.
one is in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, Wonderfest is partnering not with the San Francisco Public Library, but with the Commonwealth Club.
Mm.
So that's an event that isn't free. But one can get, through a special promo code with Wonderfest, a great discount. The subject is, let me give the full title here.
Mm-hmm.
Full title is Arctic Unfrozen. It features Dr. Mia Bennett, who's Associate Professor of Geography
mm-hmm.
at the University of Washington. And she's talking about what is happening up in the Arctic, both from a global warming point of view, but also from a geopolitical point of view. We've heard about some high-up Americans wanting to acquire Greenland, things like that.
Okay.
The up-north territory is becoming more and more important politically, and also it's changing rather dramatically due to climate change. So Arctic Unfrozen, that happens on June 8th. It's an evening event starting mm-hmm. at 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get this right. 5:30 p.m.
Oh, okay.
And it's you can learn about it at wonderfest.org. Arctic Unfrozen is the title.
Excellent. And I see that you have a promo code. Am I allowed to give it out to my listening audience?
Oh, yes, please do.
It's the promo code is WONDERKNOTS, and you can get a discount on those tickets.
Yeah. The idea is that you're a WONDERKNOT if you indeed like this emotion of wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And we claim that everybody that even visits WONDERFEST online is indeed a WONDERKNOT. Single word, so that promo code again is WONDERKNOTS, plural.
Okay. Excellent. All right, so that sounds amazing. Do you have any sort of ongoing things that happen, or are they all sort of random?
I see. The ongoing events happen up there at Hop Monk Tavern in Marin,
mm-hmm.
and they happen generally two or three times per month.
Okay.
And there are some very interesting talks coming up. Maybe I'll... what I can access them, I'm online. I go to, strangely enough, the archives of WONDERFEST
mm-hmm.
to see not just past events, to learn about those, but also about upcoming events. So let me mention one other
that's
happening up there in Marin. This is on June 9th. That's a Tuesday evening. WONDERFEST
mm-hmm.
typically has its events on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
And that's entitled An Innovative Future for Planet Earth via space, because you'll notice it at wonderfest.org at our website, because it has the abbreviated title Synthetic Astrobiology.
Mm.
This is how to create new capabilities with life. And it's just it's a fascinating subject. Our speaker is Dr. Lynn Rothschild, who is a NASA and a Stanford astrobiologist and so-called synthetic biologist, making life.
That sounds amazing.
I think it should be good.
So how do you acquire the different scientists? Are these all friends of yours, or do you have this amazing network of contacts? How does it come to
I like to think of them all as my friends, and it's quite an honor knowing so many people who are, I got to say, so smart and know so much.
Mm-hmm.
But this got started, my connection with scientists around the Bay Area, started when I worked with the Berkeley SETI Research Institute up on the hill at your alma mater there, just on the hill above the Cal campus.
Mm-hmm.
And the Berkeley SETI, remember, stands for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And they do this scientific search there at Berkeley, just as a similar organization in the South Bay called the SETI Institute conducts similar research. And this effort to detect signals from hypothetical extraterrestrial intelligent civilizations has been going on for 50, 60 years, and we haven't gotten a signal yet. But people like us, I imagine you and me, Marilyn, find this subject so interesting that it allows me to reach out with that topic and get other scientists interested in reaching the public.
Mm.
Because SETI, to understand why we bother to search and the limitations of the search and what we're searching for, involves so many branches of science that through my work with SETI, I've been able to make connections with these different people, like, for instance, that Dr. Lynn Rothschild, who is a synthetic biologist. So it's been a great gig helping, starting to learn about SETI.
Excellent. Now, for people who are, just to reiterate, for people who are interested in learning more about all of the events that you guys put on and just science in general, how do they go about doing that?
I would urge that they do indeed visit the WONDERFEST website. It's got a short URL, WONDERFEST, all is one word, .org. Now, I got to lay my cards on the table at the start that this really is a pro-science organization. WONDERFEST has a board of directors that makes sure that the executive director, namely me, Tucker Hyatt, does a good job. It is perhaps the world's smallest corporation, but it is small and mighty. And again, it's been around for, since 98. So in a year or two, we'll be celebrating our 30th anniversary.
That'll wow. Very cool. Very cool. Well, Tucker, I want to thank you so, so much for being on the show today.
Oh, you are very welcome, Marilyn. I love the fact that you host our Science On Voice.
Oh, I love talking to scientists. I'm always surprised that I'm surprised by how interesting it is. And they actually make the effort to make it understandable for people who don't have a science background. So I'm grateful for that.
Indeed.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Tucker.
Thank you, Marilyn.
All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check out the things that are happening at Wonderfest. Tucker mentioned about the world of wonder, so this song is I Wonder.
I wonder, my little darling, where can you be again tonight while the moon is shining bright? I wonder. Baby, my heart keeps on aching. Why for you? Can our love be mistaken? Baby, don't you say that this must really mean our ending? I wonder. Baby, I've been through lover's lane. I've been making life just the same. I've been traveling for miles around, trying to find the one I love, call my own. I wonder, well, 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 little baby, will you think of me every day? Though I may be a million miles away, I wonder. I've been making life just the same. I've been traveling for miles around, trying to find the one I love, call my own. I wonder, well, 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 little baby, will you think of me again today? Though I may be a million miles away, I wonder.
That's Cecil Grant and I Wonder from the Central Avenue Sounds, Los Angeles, 1921 to 1956. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Again, I mentioned that there's so many things happening in the city that you could just walk around randomly and someone tells you about an event that you didn't even know about. And that's what happened. I am so lucky to be able to just talk to people at other events to find out about new events. One of the new events I hear that's going to be going on is a performance by the San Francisco City Chorus. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome their artistic director, Michael Conley. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
And so tell me a little bit about the history of the San Francisco City Chorus.
The City Chorus was founded in 1979 mm-hmm. as a program of the City Parks and Recreation Department.
Oh, okay.
As a community chorus. And it went along like that through the mid-90s, and then the chorus decided to become an independent community music ensemble, so they left the aegis of the city and mm-hmm. formed their own board and became a nonprofit chorus, mm-hmm. and it's been that way ever since. So like most nonprofit community groups, they have a board, and they take donations and raise money and do fundraisers, and then the membership of the chorus pays dues, mm-hmm. so yeah, it's the typical model.
I'm curious, what was the impetus to go independent? Was it just easier to manage?
Maybe. I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
That's a good question. Maybe, right. I wonder if there's someone who's been around long enough. Who knows?
Okay.
Probably they just wanted more freedom to do their own thing.
Well, how long have you been artistic director?
2 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And before that, were you a singer, or did you get involved? Were you brought in directly?
No, a good friend of mine, Larry Marietta, was the director of the chorus for more than 20 years, and he decided to retire a couple years ago, mm-hmm. and I had directed the choir a couple times, filling in for him when he had a medical thing. And his partner, John Walco, is the longtime accompanist of the choir, the pianist. And John is also my colleague at Calvary Presbyterian Church in Pacific Heights, where I'm the music director. He's our organist. So I kind of had a connection with the group, and I just decided to throw my hat in the ring, and they ended up picking me. So,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
All right. And what kinds of things does the San Francisco City Chorus sing?
So a wide range of music, kind of anything that a chorus can sing. They sing. They do typical masterworks, things like the Mozart Requiem and other major works with orchestra. But we also do concerts, mostly a cappella or with piano, that feature a lot of new music by mm-hmm. composers who are alive or recently composed. And so it's all over the map. And then we do a very popular Sing It Yourself Messiah every year with a small orchestra that people come and they get to be the chorus and they just sight read through the piece. That's always popular. But we typically do two concerts a year.
Okay. Now, I understand you have a performance coming up.
Yes, this coming Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at Calvary Presbyterian Church, where I'm also the music director, at 7 o'clock. We're doing a program called Flights of Fancy.
Okay.
Which is kind of a combination of the idea of doing music about actual flights
mm-hmm.
And flights of the imagination.
Okay.
Hence the title. So it's sort of a exploration of where those things meet. So like we're doing a piece called The Campers at Kitty Hawk, which is a sort of a minimalist piece, kind of like Philip Glass or John Adams, that tells the story of the Wright brothers' first flight at Kitty Hawk. And it's a really cool short little piece. We're doing a piece called Measure Me Sky by Elaine Hagenberg, who's a wonderful up-and-coming composer who's become very popular. Her work is really beautiful. And this piece is about how your spirit soars,
mm-hmm.
And then other things that are kind of just about imaginative things, like the Fairies Chorus from Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream music.
Okay.
And so it's a combination of some things that are a cappella and some things with piano, and then a lot of stuff with orchestra.
And did you choose the theme?
Yes, that's a big part of my job, is thinking about what kind of music we want to do and mm-hmm. coming up with ideas that hopefully will be interesting and that will both interest our singers but also an audience.
Okay.
And I love programming around a theme. Mm-hmm. You know, you could just do a concert that's, you know, Bach
stuff
and
I
Beethoven,
like.
And
right.
that's fine. That's uh-huh. great. But I think it's interesting to sort of challenge yourself as a artist to come up with a program that's built around a theme, because you never know. That way you can combine sort of different kinds of music mm-hmm. and different eras of music and
right.
things, and figure out ways that they intersect. And
right,
yeah, I
right.
love working that way.
Yeah, I do themes on my blues show, like today, that was like head and foot and steps. It's like,
oh, that's what, cool.
Because it's a lot of times it really is the only way to kind of get out of a rut and,
yes.
and listen to things that you would normally not have listened to.
Exactly.
So how did you get to the theme of flights, and were there themes that you had considered and kind of hit a dead end and tossed out?
Oh, there are always themes that I consider and hit uh-huh. dead end. Actually, the reason I came up with this theme is because I was considering doing a very difficult piece by Eric Whitaker called mm-hmm. Leonardo Dreams of His Flying Machine.
Mm-hmm.
I'd done that years ago in New York, and but I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, that piece is going to take so many hours of rehearsal time
mm.
that it would make filling out the rest of the program challenging.
Sure.
I said, but I like this idea of flight, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of other music around that theme that could be really cool. So then it kind of evolved. And then I thought about the fact that I had written a choral and orchestral song cycle to the poetry of Emily Dickinson.
Oh, wow.
That deals, it's called This Bequest of Wings from
uh-huh.
one of her poems. And
okay.
it deals with a lot of ideas of birds and bees and other flying things, but also just how your spirit soars when you're focused on spiritual matters.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of wove in that theme in a different
mm-hmm.
way. And I thought, well, I haven't done that piece since I lived in New York. It hasn't been done since 2012, and it would be really cool to do the West Coast premiere, and it kind of fits this concert. So
mm-hmm.
the rest of it sort of flowed from a desire to do my own music.
Oh, so. Okay. We're allowed to do that.
Yes.
So when you present the themes, do you present the theme as, here's the theme, and do you get feedback from the singers, or what is the group dynamic?
Well, we have a board, and typically I'll present my ideas for programming for the year
mm-hmm.
to the board, and their main concern is just how much will it cost, and can we fund it, and
got it.
Is it practical, can we make it work?
Mm-hmm.
They don't typically have a lot of input in terms of the actual music, but we do surveys every year of our singers and ask them a lot of questions about
okay.
the music that we do
okay.
and how the rehearsals are run and everything else. And I definitely take that into consideration. Like
okay.
if we're getting a lot of feedback, oh, this new music was fine, but could we do more Mozart, please?
Mm.
You know, I will certainly take that into consideration, because
okay.
you want your singers to be loving what they're doing.
So in the lineup of songs that you're going to be doing, what is one that the chorus has, from your point of view, seems to be having the most fun with?
Oh, the most fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard question, but I think one that they clearly loved from the second we started rehearsing it was the first one I mentioned by Elaine Hagenberg, Measure Me Sky.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so pretty. It's just a joy to sing, and it just really kind of leaps off the page. It's so full of beautiful energy and soaring melodies.
Mm-hmm.
They clearly loved that one from the beginning. Sometimes it's a process, though. So there's another sort of weird piece that I programmed by a mid-century composer named Norman Dello Gioia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a setting of a sort of goofy little poem by Vachel Lindsay called Two Old Crows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a story about these two crows who are sitting on a fence rail and talking about philosophy, and a bee comes along, and it's difficult, but it's really energetic
uh-huh.
and cool, and I think they're loving that one now that they've mastered it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what kind of response do you generally get from your audiences?
Well, it's sort of hard to measure that in some ways,
mm-hmm.
but but we always seem to have enthusiastic audiences, and they enjoy the programs. And I always think if an audience is really quiet, mm-hmm. it's a good sign mm-hmm. in a classical music context. Mm. It's sort of the opposite maybe of going to rock concerts or concerts where the audience needs to be involved. Mm-hmm. I think their involvement is often measured by how focused they are and how carefully they're listening and mm-hmm. quiet. And then at the end, if they erupt in a lot of applause, you know, it was a good thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and of course it's a community music ensemble. So much of the audience is made up of friends and family and associates of the people who are in the choir. So mm-hmm. they're there to support them. And it's a really fun and supportive and enthusiastic environment because of that.
Have you seen that that video? There was an orchestra playing classical music, and at the end, you just hear one little voice that goes, "Wow, it was a little kid."
Yes,
that just touches my
that.
Heart. Yeah, he was, and apparently he was autistic and somewhat pre-verbal, and so that really, the music just went in and grabbed him.
And out it came. Yeah, I love that. It's so great.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Like, I think about that ever since I've heard that story, which is like a few months ago. I think about it at least once a week, just how amazing that is.
Yeah, that was a beautiful moment.
So let's talk about some of the other shows that you've done in the past. What were some of the older themes?
The older themes. Our last concert, our earlier concert this year mm-hmm. was, it was called Happy Holidays. Ooh. Every Holiday Everywhere All at Once. Obviously a takeoff on the movie Everything Everywhere All at mm-hmm, Once. Mm-hmm. And I just had this idea of doing a concert on the theme of holidays. And then I thought, because so many people do Christmas concerts, it's just a big thing, obviously, in the choral world. But I'm mm-hmm. like, we don't really need another Christmas concert. And our concerts are usually in November anyway. I thought, what if we just did a concert about as many holidays as we could cram into one program?
Okay.
So we did like Thanksgiving and Halloween and New Year's mm-hmm. and Valentine's Day and St. Patrick's Day, which was a really cool way to bring in a huge diversity of music.
Were there any sort of random holidays that you were able to slip in there? Like Boxing Day, or I don't know, take your daughter to work day, or, you know.
I'm trying to think. No, I think they were all kind of standard holidays. Well, I found a bunch of music that sort of revolved loosely around the idea of spring, like spring festivals mm-hmm. in different places. So we did end up doing some music that weren't really a specific holiday. They were kind of just around the theme of spring.
Got it.
So I guess that was a little random.
But. Okay. But this year, this upcoming Saturday, the theme is flight.
Yeah, it's flight, both in the sense of actually flying and what happens when your spirit flies, when your spirit soars, or when your imagination takes flight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of the combination of those two things.
How many people are in the chorus?
We have almost 100 members,
wow.
But things, you know, this being San Francisco and people being busy and having crazy lives and a lot of responsibilities, we always end up losing some for the actual concert. So mm-hmm. I think we have about 80 people.
That's still a lot.
It's a great
number.
Yeah. You know, COVID did a lot of damage to a lot of choirs because you can't meet and sing safely when mm-hmm. there's respiratory mm-hmm, illnesses mm-hmm. going around. It's a very dangerous activity. So choruses really had to take a long break during COVID, and that did a number on a lot of groups, but we've seen a huge upturn in interest new members joining. We have a lot of young people, which is really great.
Great.
Yeah.
So how do people get tickets to go to this performance?
They can go right to the chorus's website, sfcitychorus.org. And there's a link there to get tickets online, or they can just get them at the door.
Oh, yeah. And where is the door?
The door is Calvary Presbyterian Church, which is right at the corner of Fillmore Street and Jackson Streets, which is a nice little busy bus line right there at the corner. And it's a wonderful venue. It's a really beautiful space. And it seats 1,000. So y'all come on out because we could fit a lot of people
in
there.
That's a lot. So you've mentioned your website. Well, what time does the show start?
7 o'clock.
Okay. And what time can – if people are going to buy tickets at the door, what time can they start?
Should they start arriving?
They
can come as early as 6, but 6:30 for sure is plenty of time.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much, Michael Connelly, for being on the show today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
So, People of Earth, this is your opportunity to go experience some beautiful singing by at least 80 members of the San Francisco City Chorus. So, that's going to be fun. Since he mentioned flight, I've got Flight 3D. Jimmy Forrest and Flight 3D. That is from Honkers and Bar Walkers, Volume 1. I highly recommend that series. There are three of them. I love them all. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Once again, I am really, really fortunate that I just know people who do stuff and who are super talented and who have I know singers and dancers and comedians and blah, 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 blah. One of the most talented people that I know is in the studio right now. I'd like to welcome Ms. Julia Jackson. Hello.
Hello, and thanks for that overly generous intro, Marilyn.
I would not say it was overly generous at all.
Oh, okay.
So, Julia, give our audience the rundown on who you are and why you're so talented.
Oh, well, thank you. It's genetic. I am a solo performance artist, as well as a stand-up comedian and a playwright. And solo performance, people kind of get it twisted when they know you're a comic, because they think it's just you on HBO or whatever doing your comedy for an hour. It's not that. It's storytelling. It's basically a play where you play all the characters. Overwhelmingly, it's autobiographical, but not always. There's a lot of breaking of the fourth wall. I think comedians have an edge in this genre because we know when to lighten it up and how to do it. Because, you know, it can be fairly intense, but you want to go for a poignancy, not necessarily like, oh, my God.
So when did you discover that you had a talent for comedy?
First day of the third grade.
Go on.
In Milwaukee. I come from a different school that was not welcoming. And I was kind of having a rough time, and I imitated the teacher. I was sitting across from what is now my oldest friend, Josh Silverman. Hope you're listening. 1971. And I just cracked him and everybody up at the table. And it's funny because I immediately had, simultaneously had two thoughts. One was, man, I'm funny. And the other one was, this will work. You know, because I'd come from a bad situation. I think a lot of comics, you don't have to be a comic. People use comedy to diffuse situations or help them along socially. So, yeah, it was way back in the day.
So it was it was basically self-preservation.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
100%.
But then you move through life, and there comes a period in your life where you no longer need that self-preservation, but you're still a comedian.
Says you. Yes. No, I really... really loved it. I actually was in L.A. in the 80s, and a friend of mine said, oh, you should take this scene study workshop. And I never acted, and I was like, yeah, okay, why not? And I really liked it. And one time, the guy said, as for actors, for timing, to help them with timing, he challenged people to do 2 minutes of stand-up. And all these actors were terrified. Nobody would do it. Me and this guy named Tracy. He was pretty funny. And so I crushed it. And the guy that ran the workshop, he since passed away, is David Beard, who's a director. He said, I'm not telling you to stop acting, but wow, you really need to pursue this. So then I went to the Laugh Factory a couple times in L.A., and I was doing well. And then I noticed my material was moving more towards politics. And I was 26, and I was like, you going to make jokes about it, or are you going to do something about it? And so I went to graduate school and kind of left it behind at that time.
So what got you back into it then?
I moved here in 1993 to the city, to San Francisco, that I love. And I saw an ad for, it used to be the Bearded Lady Cafe. I think it was, it might have been on Guerrero or Valencia. And they were having an open mic. Turns out it was blasted poetry. But anyway, I saw it, and I was 30, and I had just, you know, gotten my first real, real job, which I still have. And I was trying to be all professional and responsible and all that. And then I think like 6 months in, I'm like, is this all there is? And then I remembered what I'd really like to do. And so that was...
your side hustle.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you remember the first show you did where you felt like, it's official, you know, like some like musicians go when they hear their stuff on the radio or something.
It was two things. I was at it's no longer around, Josie's Juice Joint.
I remember Josie's Juice Joint.
Right, Monday night, and I'd gone there and I'd done really well, and I came back to get booked, and the woman there did the booking. She just looked at me and she was very upset because I made jokes. I'm from Wisconsin, and we're a thick people, and I had some self-deprecating humor. Anyway, she did not like it, and so she tossed me out. She's like, no more for you. And I was a little teary, and I called my dad back in Wisconsin, and he said, you got thrown out. That means you're really saying something. And I was like, yeah, Dad, you're right. So then I kept going, but it wasn't until I did a fundraiser for Delancey Street Foundation. Gosh, this is forever ago, probably like 1995. This guy named Tony Sparks, godfather of comedy here in San Francisco. He's an amazing guy. And the fundraiser was down at Pier something something. And I remember I accidentally went to the restaurant. I thought it was there. And they said, no, it's across the street. And Tony was famous for hyping gigs. oh, it's going to be big. Take these apples. It's going to be big. And it'd be like five people at the coffee shop. So he was like, oh, this is going to be big. I'm like, yeah, sure, Tony.
Uh-huh.
And then I came around the corner at that warehouse. And there was a noise that about 200 people make. And I was like, oh, God. I had to take myself for a walk. Like, I can do it. I can do it.
Uh-huh.
And I crushed it.
Nice.
I mean, everybody did. But that was the night I think I really was like, yeah. Yeah, I have what it takes here.
So let's fast forward to today.
Yes.
What are you doing today for our listening audience to enjoy?
Yes. Tonight at the Marsh Theater, that's on Valencia between 22nd and 21st in mm-hmm. the upstairs studio.
Mm-hmm.
David Ford is he's like godfather of solo here in the city now that Kamau Bell has left. He's great.
Did he move?
No, Kamau's just not doing solo anymore.
Oh, gotcha.
And so, but David's a fantastic dramaturge and director, all that stuff.
Some people don't know what dramaturge means. You better explain it.
They're like cliff notes for your writing.
Okay.
They help you with, they help playwrights mm-hmm. kind of. Editing is not exactly the same. It's much more involved than that. But anyway, they give you feedback and this and that. So he had a 10-week, and he does this quite often at both the Mars San Francisco and in Berkeley, a 10-week create and perform your own work. So it's kind of a, what do you call it, not a formula, a laboratory for new work.
Okay.
And people come who've never done this before, people of old hat, you know, all of us, and it's so wonderful. It's kind of this, like, contradiction in terms. Solo performance is inherently collaborative.
Okay, explain that.
Well, because even though it's just you up there, you're getting feedback from your people in the workshop with you, mm-hmm. as well as David, suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
That's so even though it's your story, right? Yours, the only one they see up there, it's kind of like a team.
Okay.
You know.
And they help people with pacing and structure.
Well, yeah, you can ignore the feedback at your peril. I listen.
Okay.
So, yeah, I hadn't written a new piece in, oh, God, probably 5 or 6 years. And it just, it's kind of like getting a tattoo. It has to be organic. It can't be a forced decision. And then I was just having some pretty strong feelings about certain stuff in the family and all that. And mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? Going back. I'm a mom, too, so, you know, it's
yes.
finding the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're just between now and, I guess, 6 or 7 years ago, maybe it's been. There was a lot of grist for the mill in the life experiences department, life being lifey.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot to work with.
Okay.
Time to process. You know, all artists' therapeutic
times.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So the piece is called The Way We Weren't, and it's a 20-minute excerpt, so it's going to be a much larger hour-plus piece.
Okay.
So, but for purposes of the workshop and the show we're putting on tonight, everyone's doing 20 to 25-minute pieces.
Oh, okay.
And I believe there are three of us going on tonight.
And is it only tonight, or?
Well, no. I'm going to be turning this into a much larger show. I'm not sure what other people's plans are,
mm-hmm.
but his David's class, so there's one tonight. There's also one tomorrow night in San Francisco at the Marsh Studio, same
mm-hmm,
place.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to themarsh.org, they'll have all the information about the shows. I think there's also stuff going on in Berkeley
because
he had two separate classes over there as well.
Okay. So what time is this all happening?
7:30.
Okay. So when you do this piece tonight, mm-hmm. will we get a chance to see it again before it becomes a larger piece, or do we have to wait for the larger piece?
That's a good question. I think you're going to have another chance to see it. I'm working with a woman named Vanessa Khalil, who's mm-hmm. also a solo performance artist,
okay.
Here in the city, and I think we're trying to put something together in the next few months. Three Girls Theater, which is a fantastic organization, 3GT, if you haven't heard of them. They support women playwrights over 40, trans people, queer people, you name it. And they have just moved to 1625 Bush. Great space. So if anyone's looking to rent rehearsal space
mm-hmm.
or to put on a show of any kind,
mm-hmm.
it's fantastic.
And where like?
Bush and Franklin.
Oh, okay.
Right.
All right, all right, all right. So, and how did you get involved with the 3GT?
I initially, during COVID, I think it was during COVID, I heard about them through Tina Delia, I'm going to mess up her name. Mm-hmm. She's also an amazing solo artist. She did a solo show called Overlook Latinas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think through my relationship with her, I heard about them. And then there was a women's writing workshop over Zoom that was free that they put on. And I ended up making tons of connections with other artists through that.
Wow.
So I did I did a staged reading with them. I also did one of my older shows, Worst Boyfriend Ever. And there's another one called Man Enough to Be a Girl. It's about buying my wedding dress.
Okay.
So they're just amazing. And I'm shocked more people don't know about them.
Okay. Well, now hopefully they do.
They're really great. They're really great. It's a nonprofit. So, yeah, you can rent space there fairly cheaply. I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they're just there to support, you know.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure our listening audience knows about the event that's happening apparently tonight if we want to see
you. It is tonight.
Okay.
Yeah, the Marsh has the regular Marsh, like really big, like the main stage. Mm-hmm. And they also, one door down, have the studio, which is upstairs, but it is accessible. They have an elevator.
Okay.
The show is at 7:30. It's Valencia between 22nd and 21st. It might be 1062 Valencia. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's like
it stands
walking.
Out. I've walked past it.
Right. It's walking distance from the BART.
Okay, okay.
From the 24th Street BART, if you don't have a car, and just take, you know, come on in the city.
And then how do people get tickets?
On the marsh.org website, you will see a link right there. It may be under classes. Okay. But I think it's right there on the front. It's also on my Facebook page.
Okay.
And the Marsh's Facebook page.
Okay.
You can see the link right there.
Okay, okay. And then after you do this performance, mm-hmm. do you have anything in the offing of other performances that you've got planned? Or are you focusing
right
on
that? Right now I don't, because I'm very focusing. I was going to be at the Bizarre Cafe doing some comedy. And I got invited for this Friday, but it's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
So thank you. I am leaving town for the weekend.
Good for you.
But that's another great venue that people don't know about is the Bizarre Cafe.
Where's the Bizarre Cafe?
California off, ooh, I'm going to get it wrong, 18th, 17th, something like that, or maybe 20th.
It's out in the avenues.
It's out in the avenues.
Okay.
Which is not Siberia, by the way.
Right, right, right.
But it's a coffee shop that has a tradition of performance.
And they're doing something.
They do comedy. A guy named Danny Dutchy, who's great. He uh-huh. does comedy once a month there.
Uh-huh.
And they have live music all the time. It's really intimate, but it's not too teeny. You know what I mean? It's I just love it. I've been going there forever.
And you were supposed to do something Friday, but you're like...
I said, no, homegirl is leaving town.
Oh, okay. But letting the listening audience know that yes. if they want to do something on Friday, they can go to the Bizarre Cafe.
Go to the Bizarre Cafe. Danny does. It's free. It's free. There's so many spots here in the city that mm-hmm. have performances that don't cost anything.
I love
or
that.
Or very little. Right.
Yeah.
But they need your support, just like journalists, independent journalists and artists, particularly in these interesting times
interesting
known as fascism.
Times. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could use the support.
So if there's anything you want to leave our listening audience with, you should voice it right now.
Come to the show mm-hmm. tonight. And mm-hmm. also, I love you and there's nothing you can do about it.
Ah. All right. Well, Julia Jackson, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, people of Earth, Julia is very talented, so you're going to want to see her. You're going to want to see everybody today. I mean, I feel that I'm really lucky that I get to talk to these people about the performances that they do, and occasionally I get to go and see them. And it's if you aren't going to enjoy stuff, that is you making a decision to do it, because there's tons of stuff out there to be enjoyed. It's just about time for me to leave, so I'm going to leave you with Jim Backus. I'll be back next week. I'll leave you with Delicious. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.
Ooh, we're going to have fun.
Yes.
It's a cozy table, isn't it?
And champagne, my dear.
delicious.